Good afternoon. This is KTOO. I'm Yvonne Krumrie. A Chilkat robe that could be hundreds of years old was purchased at auction late last year by a group of donors and given to Sea Alaska Heritage Institute for Chilkat weavers to study. The robe could offer new insight into the endangered art form. Simsian basket weaver Mingipsha Gipeg Candy McGilton says she first found the robe when she was looking for traditional woven baskets online.
I just stumbled across the robe in an auction.
McGilton sent a photo of the robe to Haida weaver and historian Kajuch Evelyn Vanderhoop. Vanderhoop says the robe at the auction has the same pattern of a robe that's at the Museum of Natural History in New York. The mirror design features formline faces in faded blue and yellow, outlined in bold black. The face at the top is upside down, with killer whales facing out. Vanderhoop says this robe's killer whale pattern resembled a robe which 19th century ethnographer George Emmons noted may have been the first Chilkat robe given to Tlingit people by Simsian weavers.
It's an exciting chronological story. That whole robe has a wonderful story.
Originally, Simsian people wove in the Chilkat style. Tlingit weavers learned the art form through gifted blankets. They're called Nahain in Tlingit. And McGilton, who lives in Metlakatla, felt a personal connection to the pattern's history, too.
That trade between the Tlingit and the Simsian with these Chilkat robes, it's a really fascinating and pretty miraculous thing that has happened throughout our histories.
She's had a chance to study old baskets, to learn about patterns and techniques, and knew that this robe could offer that opportunity to Chilkat weavers.
There are secrets in the weavings that are just begging for somebody to look for them.
And she says she's glad that the robe is back in Southeast Alaska so young people in Metlakatla can visit it.
I feel like it's important for kids in my community particularly to know that we have a connection to Chilkat weaving, because we don't have weavers like that in our community, and I want that to be an inspirational story for them.
McGilton reached out to Catherine Bunn Marcuse at the Burke Museum in Seattle to see if the museum could buy the robe and store it. Bunn Marcuse, who's the curator, says she believes living Indigenous artists should have access to old pieces to learn from.
The collections are the teachers, right? The old belongings. These creations have so much knowledge woven into them.
And a robe like this one could answer many questions.
The mountain goat wool, the cedar bark, the dyes, when do you collect them? What time of year? How do you process them? What are the right plant materials? What are the mordants in a dye? There's an unbelievable richness to the Indigenous scientific knowledge that is throughout these old pieces.
Bunn Marcuse says the museum couldn't make the space or gather the funds in such a quick time frame, just days before the start of the auction. So a group of donors gathered together to purchase it. One of the donors, Bob Moore from Seattle, says it's worth more than the $39,000 the group paid to make sure it doesn't end up in private hands.
I know that a full-size robe by a contemporary Chilkat weaver would be $75,000 or $100,000 or more, because it takes at least a year, sometimes 2 years, to weave. So we know how much work goes into it. So the price for this robe didn't seem excessive to us at all.
The Burke Museum connected the donors to Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, and the robe was sent to Juneau. Local Tlingit weaver Lily Hope says the robe returning to its homelands helps revitalize the art form as a whole.
I'm most excited to take my students over to Sea Alaska Heritage Institute and look at the backside of this robe. That's where we learn the most from our ancestral pieces.
And that wasn't possible before now. This robe had been in private collections for at least 60 years.
It matters that this robe is coming back with accessibility, because many robes throughout history are held in families and aren't visible to artists and makers.
Hope says it may not be usable in ceremony, though. Museums used to use arsenic or mercury as pesticides to preserve old items, making them hazardous now. The robe is now in Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's Archives and Collections Department, and next month, weavers will start learning from it. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Krumrie. The U.S. Forest Service has decided where 7 new recreation cabins will be built in Southeast Alaska within the next 2 years. Some will be on the road system in the Tongass National Forest for easier access. It's part of an effort to bring 25 new cabins to Alaska's national forests. KSTK's Colette Czarnicki has this report.
Although 8 cabins are eventually planned for the Wrangell and Petersburg districts, just 2 will be built in 2025. One cabin will be near Lawn Lake on Wrangell Island, which they're currently calling Little Lakes. It will be renamed with a Tlingit name. The other site, Woodpecker Cabin, will be on Petersburg's Mitkoff Island along Woodpecker Cove Road on the southwest side of the island. Tori Hauser is the recreational manager for the Wrangell and Petersburg Forest Service districts. She says that the Forest Service has prioritized building just 2 cabins right in the 2 districts.
Every district wants to have a new cabin, and we don't have the funding to do like hundreds of new cabins. So we do have to go through some kind of a process to determine which ones are going to be most valuable and serving people and meeting all the demands.
By 2025, 5 other cabins will be built in the Tongass National Forest, a cabin near Perseverance Trail near Ketchikan, and one at False Bay in Hoona. Also, one at Signal Creek Campground in Ketchikan, Mendenhall Campground in Juneau, and El Capitan Interpretive Site on Prince of Wales Island. The cabins are part of the Alaska Cabins Project, which plans to bring 25 new cabins to the Tongass and Chugach National Forests. Through public outreach, the Forest Service found that people prefer to use cabins where there's easy access by road or boat, and both cabins will be bigger and more accessible for people with different abilities. They'll be near recreational opportunities like fishing and hiking, and also have significant covered porches. Hauser says Wrangell students helped design the cabin at the Little Lakes site.
We brought some students out from the high school here in Wrangell, and they're part of a group called T3 Alliance, and they use drones to provide us with some footage of the Little Lakes area, and then they made these little proposals of how they would build the cabin and the outhouse and how they would orient.
The landscape architects working on the project took the middle and high school students' drone footage, and they're using it in the official design for Little Lakes. Besides the 2 new cabins, the Forest Service also plans to repair a cabin in each district. West Point Cabin, located about 24 miles by boat from Petersburg in 2025, and the popular Annan Bay Cabin at the Annan Wildlife Observatory about 30 miles southeast of Wrangell. A tree destroyed its roof last year, rendering it unusable. The Alaska Cabins Project is funded by $14.4 million from the federal bipartisan infrastructure law. The Forest Service's partner, the National Forest Foundation, also gave another $3.7 million. Jason Anderson with the Forest Service in Petersburg says the cabins that get built on the Tongass and Chugach will ultimately come down to funding.
Sometimes what we find in these cabin projects is there's certain ideals that we want to meet that are really either excessively expensive or just operationally impossible.
Above all, Anderson says this project is important for Alaskans because wildlife and recreation are essential in the Southeast Alaskan culture.
We're definitely excited to be working on the project. We know Alaskans love their cabins. We, our goal through the project with the National Forest Foundation is to try to put at least one cabin on all of our ranger districts so that all of our communities and user groups get to experience a new one.
Anderson says that Alaska's cabin project will support the existing workforce, as it will have a local economic influence using local wood and resources. In Wrangell, I'm Colette Czarnicki.
U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski introduced a bill Monday to support coastal communities. The legislation, called the Working Waterfronts Act, would establish grants for marine infrastructure and mariculture, resources for fishermen to convert boats to hybrid or electric engines, and improve research on ocean acidification, among other things. Murkowski's office said in a press release, the bill aims to improve food security, shoreside infrastructure, and even support federal conservation research projects. Several fishing industry groups and organizations voiced support for the bill. The senator said in the release that she's been in contact with several ocean-based industry experts. Murkowski also asked for public feedback on what to include in the bill back in 2022. The legislation has been referred to the Senate Committee on Finance, but it's unknown if it will take the bill. You're listening to KTOO.